So anyway, what I would like to talk about is uses of solar hard X-rays, and I won't talk about all of the uses that we can put them to. I thought of a couple more during this morning's talks, which I won't mention unless I'm asked about. What I will do is talk about the basics of hard X-rays and what they imply for what we know about the way the corona evolves. And I'll talk about two specific current things, namely the presence of hard X-rays at flare onset and this very nice event from April 18th of last year, in which we saw moving hard X-ray source for the first time, which in principle has some interesting implications. But let's do the basics first. Basics. All right, as we all know, the hard X-rays come from Bremsstrahlung. This is free radiation on H, proton plus electron, and it's a very inefficient process. So that means that it's possible to have a lot of energy in the electrons. And in fact, it's usually attributed to Lynn and Hudson, this result. It's possible to conclude, in fact, that most of the flare energy is in the form of these electrons. Actually, that result antedates Lynn and Hudson. And I forget who it was who did it first. It may have been Conner and Donnelly. But it's a very simple result. But it's just due to the fact that the Bremsstrahlung is quite inefficient. Another basic thing is that the hard X-rays normally follow what we call the Newport effect. And I'll explain that in some detail. And footpoints, often double footpoints, are quite prominent. Spectra look like power laws. They may be broken power laws. And an interesting thing which nobody has explained yet is that in the impulsive phase where one sees the strong hard X-rays, intense hard X-rays, one has typically a soft, hard, soft pattern of the spectral evolution, and I'll show examples of that. I won't talk about protons at all, but the most interesting news from the last few years, sort of Ruben Ramadi's last real contribution, I think, major contribution, was that, in fact, we now know that protons at 1 MeV, 10 MeV energies also, typically, and consistent with always, also dominate flare energy. So both species of particles have to be considered in dealing with flare theory. Also, I should say, we see Bob Lynn discovery super hot hard X-ray sources. Now, this crude attempt at a PowerPoint sketch shows the hard X-ray gamma ray spectrum from 1 kilovolt up to 1 GeV kind of schematically. And you can see many components. There's what is labeled hot up there. Maybe if I pointed at the pointer.
Two varieties, laser and straight.
Great, okay. This hot here is just your basic flare loops, 10, 20, 30 million degrees. Super hot is extra special flare loops that are hotter still. Not so clear whether there's really a gap here. Better resolution from HESI will allow us to measure the spectrum better. Then here's the real non-thermal hard X-rays, this broken power law, which sometimes is a unbroken power law.
That's because the electron spectrum is broken. And in principle, one can invert the X-ray spectrum to get the electron spectrum. And here are gamma rays. I've only shown three. You can take your pick as to which they represent. There's a broken up Bremsstrahlung spectrum that underlies this MeV range gamma ray spectrum. There's still higher energy photons due to pi zero decay. And I'd like to comment about this broken up MeV range of X-rays. Hard X-rays in flares happen no matter what the size of the flare. So even quite small flares, and this is the result from millimeter wave radio astronomy, quite small flares generate particles at energies of many MeVs. Okay, Newport effect. This is not hard to explain. The Newport effect, Roman numeral 1 here, basically is just the result of coronal storage of energy, the longer timescales in the corona. And this is an example of what I call a Newport plot. This is the soft X-ray light curve, and this jagged one is the hard X-ray light curve. There's another example. And you can see that there's quite a faithful match as a rule. Another example. between the hard x-rays, the derivative of the soft x-ray light curve and the hard x-rays. And like I said, that's easy to understand. What's interesting is where it doesn't match, and this is an example where it doesn't match. This, again, the solid line is the soft x-rays, and the dots are the hard x-rays. And you can see that there's a hard x-ray peak here which is not at the rise phase of the soft x-rays. This is quite a different class of event, and in fact, it's by use of the Newport effect that one can find these interesting events. So I'll talk about this event. This is the April 18th event. The conclusion about this is just that energy released in the impulsive phase coincides temporally with what I think of as a distorted electron distribution function. And you should understand this is a non-MHD effect. It's not heating. I showed you that spectrum that goes across many decades of photon energy. What happens during the impulsive phase is that the electron distribution function is disrupted rather completely. And it's not collisional. Okay, so now, Newport effect part two is there is a correlation between the hard x-rays and soft x-rays from event to event. This is not a very good correlation diagram. I couldn't find Brian Dennis's most recent review to get a better one, but basically over 5 decades, there's a linear relationship between the peak hard x-ray flux and the peak soft x-ray flux. This particular correlation comes from what I call slow LDEs, which are long duration events, which also start very gradually. And so people in some cases think of these as thermal events, but they're really not thermal events. They're really non-thermal because of this correlation. Do I have an example? Yeah. This is an example of a slow LDE. Already two or three people have shown this. This is the Tsuneda's famous February 21 flare. And it's during its rise phase. Again, this solid line is the soft x-ray goes rise, and you can see that it's lasting for an hour. Right? So that makes it slow. It's a slow LDE. And during that time, the BATSE hard x-ray signal continued, and that lasted for 45 minutes until sunset on Compton GRO. And so basically, what's happening with these slow LDEs, or in general with flares, is that during the rise phase of the coronal stored energy, there is a non-thermal process which is accompanying energy release. So I think we know from this that flare energy release is not in the form of heating. It is in the form of particle acceleration. I think that's a very simple point which people really have to understand. It's not an MHD process whatsoever. It's outside the bounds of a one fluid model. So that says it. The Newport effect part two, this impulsive phase, the non-thermal effects really occur on flares of all sizes and timescales. That includes microflares and probably CMEs also. Okay, now the second thing in the basic part of this talk is the soft spectral evolution. I just want to show you this because it's not explained. And this is a modeling workshop, and unfortunately most of us are not doing particle modeling, but in principle this is something which really ought to be tackled. So here's a good example. This is the Bastille Day 2000 event, and here's the hard x-ray flux. I think Lindsay showed this. And here you can see the spectral index in the HXT, Yoko HXT M1 to M2 ratio. And you can see this ratio determines a power law spectral index, typical values 3 or 4. And you can also see sort of a mirror image between these two profiles. Whenever the hard x-rays are bright, the spectrum is hard. Okay, and that's the pattern, the soft pattern. I think Kane discovered this originally. And down here you can see the energy, the thick target power. And this is a total electron energy above 20 kilovolts. And that is 10 to the 29th ergs per second. And this is 5 minutes. So 300 times 10 to the 29, that's 3 times 10 to the 31 ergs. Right? So this is the flare energy. And that's an example of this strength of the particle acceleration. This is another example from a different X-class flare. Here's the flux. Here's the spectrum. And in this case, the spectrum went down to this astonishingly low value of almost the limit. The dotted line is the limit, theoretical limit. And this is another example from recent Czech, Frantafarnik Czech-built hard X-ray spectrometer. It's on the MTI satellite nobody's ever heard of. And but he's made this plot. Here's the flux going up and down, and here's the spectrum going down and up.
What about
this? This is September 24, 2001, I think. Well, I maybe have another. Oh yeah, that's in fact that's the subject of my next section here. Again, this is an example of a non-soft hard soft variation. This is the same April 18th event, which didn't follow the Newport effect. Here's the same late hard X-ray bump, and here's the spectral index, and you can see there's no real correlation with the hard X-ray flux. Okay, the conclusion about that is that this is something fundamental, and it's crucial to the process of energy release in flare development, which is, after all, explains the flare. And it's modelable, but it hasn't yet been modeled properly. So this is an unsolved issue here. Okay, now this is the first of the two topics. Nick, how am I doing for time?
This is, yeah, still 15 minutes.
Okay, this is the first of the two new topics. This is hard X-rays during flare onset. And I'll show you two case studies. One is the September 24 flare that Franta found. And I want to make a comment about this paper, recent paper by, are there any Slovaks here? Jivčáková, Kulinová? Jivčáková. Okay. I'll come back to that. And then maybe I'll start with that, yeah. This is the kappa distribution that people often use. Vasilinus's name is associated with this. I don't think he really started the use of this function, but it's a kind of a generalized Lorentzian function which maps, which the limit of which for large kappa is just a Maxwellian. But it has the merit that it has a power law. You can see that it goes down like minus kappa minus one. It's a power law for electron energies well above kT. And it's only got three parameters. That's why it's a useful function. Your normal Maxwellian plus a power law would have four parameters. So the point about the Jivčáková paper is that this is a paper in which an attempt is made to calculate the radiative signatures of a non-thermal electron distribution, radiation signatures and X-ray emission lines. It's a recent paper, but it uses a distribution function which is completely different from something like a kappa distribution, which is very broad. It uses a distribution function which is peaked, has a mean, is sort of like a thermal distribution. So it's, I don't know these authors, and the work is, I'm sure, very good, but it's completely wrong-headed. And somebody should do these radiation signatures for true non-thermal distributions. Okay, now my case studies are this first one, September 24. This is Franta's beautiful hard X-ray data, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. But look at the beginning here. There's a hint in his data already, slow rise of hard X-rays well before the impulsive phase. This is the Yoko HXT view of it, and you can see this same rise phase here. We can fit the spectrum, and we find that it's super hot. Right, this is from the spectral ratio of the lowest two channels, and there's 40 million degrees. So at the very beginning of the pre-flare part of this event, there's something which is highly energetic that's taking place. This is the period of time in which the filament is starting to activate, presumably. I haven't looked at the filament in this case. The filament's starting to activate and inflate and rise before the impulsive phase, then it accelerates and goes out. But already we're seeing these hard X-ray signatures. And this compares the onset as seen by HXT with the onset as seen by GOES. And you can see that far from the situation which is normally thought of the soft X-rays preceding the hard X-rays, they're happening simultaneously. And I think this is more evidence that the distribution function is just going to pot and is not describable as a temperature. This is another example. This is one that I found recently in trying to do a search for over-the-limb events like this April 18th event. And also it's super hot. Super hot here means the temperatures are, again, 40 to 50 million degrees. This is the flux here. And the conclusion of this is that There are strong suggestions, not just in these two events, but in many events, that the basic physics of pre-flare excitation is not heating, quote unquote, but instead particle acceleration. But in the superhot, in this superhot spectrum, it's a steep spectrum. It's not a power law. It can be fit to a thermal exponential spectrum, but it's nevertheless has rapid time variability, as you can see here, and adheres to the Newport effect and has properties that relate it somehow to particle acceleration. Okay, now the next new topic is about this April 18th event. This is one which appeared from behind the limb, and there was I just learned from Haimin, April 15th, right? This was a huge flare 3 days earlier, which was an X-class flare, which did not have a CME. Is that the right?
It was a limb event. I don't know if that's the CME event.
Okay.
It was
a limb event, near the limb, yeah. This event was 3 days later. It was beyond the limb,
yeah, right,
by two days or so.
Probably the same one.
Same active region. And this is the one for which we see this rising hard X-ray source. And it's quite unprecedented to see a rising, moving hard X-ray source. The motion is sort of on an MHD velocity scale, like 1,000 kilometers per second. And my Japanese colleagues and Stephen White, who's looking at the microwave observations, are convinced that this is the filament. It's a filament seen basically in hard X-rays as it rises. Now I'm supposed to interrupt this and show you movies of the event. I do that by adroitly getting out of PowerPoint, getting into Sparkle Fat, where I've prepared everything. And, this is pretty bad, isn't it? Anyway, these bottom two are the LASCO C3 on the right and C2 on the left, first frames that show the CME. And now you can see, actually, easily in the C3, you can see the snowstorm that happens as the particles from this event come. It's pretty fast, only a couple of frames even in C3. Okay. And going down into C2, there it goes, a beautiful big CME. No doubt an X-class flare. And Kevin Hurley, Jim McTiernan, and Berkeley have shown me the Ulysses data for this event. Even though it was 2 days beyond the limb, we can't see the flare itself. Ulysses could see it. And it is, in fact, a flare of a magnitude rivaling the largest of the solar cycle. And this is the most fascinating microwave event. Isn't that neat? Can you imagine this? The field of view here is about 10 arc minutes. And this is Nobuyama microwave observation, 17 gigahertz. And you can see that blob coalescing and then flying out. Is it a filament or is it not? Of course, it doesn't look elongated like a filament, but we might be seeing it end on. And this is the hard X-rays. And the hard X-rays are so fast you cannot see it, but I'll slider along here, and you can see. And this is the field of view here. Actually, the MPEG tiles are exactly 10 arc seconds. The field of view here is typical Yoko PFI field of view, 2.5 arc minutes. And you can see that the hard X-ray source moves up and out. Now, we go back to PowerPoint. We do that by going to
view,
slideshow, and then we go down here. Ha ha ha, I've got this figured out. And we click on this. Oops. We go to go, and we go to by title. Drat. Where is it? Movies. Okay, there you are. As your palms get moist, it gets harder to work the slider. Okay, this shows an overlay between the hard X-rays, which are the contours, and the microwave source. So they match quite exactly. And from that, we were able to get a density measurement. The microwaves are free, the spectrum is flat, at least part of the time. And this is the motion. Here's the hard X-ray motion from the MEM, or was it Pixons? And here's the position of the source. The X's are the position of the hard X-ray source, and the pluses are the position of the blob that you saw on the microwave source. Okay, now, do I have a slide that summarizes? Oh yes, and this is a dynamic spectrum, decimeter, meter wave, dynamic spectrum from HERISO And you can see, maybe you can't see, but there is a decimetric moving structure up here, which is a fairly common characteristic of these CME events. Okay, now just verbally, I didn't write the numbers down, but the importance of this event is the following. Thanks to the presence of the microwave observations and the density determination, we can actually count the electrons in the corona for this event. And of course, you must understand that because the flare was over the limb, we're looking, the starting point is at an altitude of something like 100,000 kilometers. We track the hard X-ray source from 100,000 kilometers to 200,000 kilometers, where the density is very, very low. The ambient density is very, very low. But we know the density in the blob, and we can count the electrons because of that. If we couldn't do that, we'd only have lower limits on the number of electrons. But we feel quite confident with the numbers that we do have because of the density measurement. And the result is the same as the Lennon-Hudson result. The result is that a huge amount of energy is required to be in these electrons. And these are entrained in this expanding CME structure. There are enough electrons, in fact, so that not only are they energetically important, but if you calculate the pressure from the electrons, that it rivals or exceeds the gas pressure. So these electrons may also be dynamically important. And this is an aspect of CMEs which may or may not be general, but then again, these observations are very difficult to make. With HESI, we should be able to see other events of this sort. But the strong suggestion is that within the acceleration of a CME, one also has to bear in mind the presence of these non-thermal particles, not an MHD process whatsoever. The conclusion from this April 18th event is that, this is the end of the talk. What? This is my last slide. So my simple conclusions are that non-thermal electrons show us the energy. Superhot spectra may show us how the distribution function evolves during energy release. And finally, and this is pretty speculative really, the non-thermal electrons may actually play a role in helping to drive CMEs. So I'll stop there. Well, if gas pressure is, of course, the CME is a magnetic thing, and so nothing mechanical will drive it. But this is within the CME, right? From the timing, we know that the hard X-ray source is—it's like the filament location. It's sort of in the core of the CME.
Right.
It's like a moving type forburst in that sense. But the moving type forburst normally is relativistic electrons.
No. Yeah, I mean, a couple hundred kV.
Yeah. Here we're seeing 50 kilovolts.
At such tenuous densities, how on earth could you keep all of the non-thermal electrons from just flying out?
Well, they're in a loop. I mean, there are field lines.
There's prominences.
Frozen field. And the interesting thing here is that the motion is not, one of the nicer things about electrons, probably nobody here will talk about this, but observations of electrons directly at 1AU, for example, or Ulysses, or something like that, can really show you the connectivity of the field to the sun, right? The electrons go very rapidly. But this is not an electron type of speed. This is 1,000 kilometers per second. This is an MHD speed rather than the speed of light. So we're seeing a structure, the evolution of a structure, and we're probably seeing acceleration of the particles within the structure. I think that was the result of Lindsay's poster at AGU, that it's very hard to make these particles impulsively. They have to really be generated on the fly as the structure evolves.
I was just curious about your numbers. You didn't show the numbers.
I didn't show the numbers.
What kind of energy totals did you get in electron?
I don't remember actually, but it's.
The reason I ask is, of course, there were events seen by Sharad early on.
Yeah.
She called super flares, where the energy again, Overville Linden, that's where the energy is absolutely enormous.
10 to the 34.
Yeah.
Right.
Orders of magnitude more.
Yeah, in this case, the numbers don't come out that large, but they're lower limits. And the problem is, of course, with an over-the-limb event like this, you don't see the whole thing. And so you cannot rule out 10 to the 34 ergs.
From Ulysses, though, you could get those.
Haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, this is not done yet. In fact, the numbers, I just got an email from Mike Wheatland, who's one of the interested people, and he said, wow, that's really neat, but you got the numbers wrong. And I don't think I did. The paper is published. But my response to him was, well, it was just a letter, and we're going to write a big paper now, and so we'll try to get it right.
The other day we saw this plot that showed the X-ray luminosity versus magnetic flux. That was linear over some large. Now, if at some point in the X-ray luminosity curve, a large amount of energy is going into electrons, why is that thing still linear? I mean, it seems to me the thing that's saying, gee, the thing that's creating X-rays at very large amounts of X-rays and the thing that's creating X-rays low a lot.
No. It's perfectly consistent. All I'm saying is that the medium of the particle of the heating is the electrons, so it's the same energy. There's no good evidence for direct thermal heating of these coronal plasmas.
Okay.
What I'm saying is there's good evidence for particles. Nothing thermal.
So it's a storage issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the theoretical ground, I want to warn you about the use of kappa distribution. Although for big kappa, it goes well to Maxwellian, but for any finite kappa, it produces integrals. Take any momentum, V, K, or K plus 1, F, V, so if it diverges.
Well, for large kappa, it shouldn't diverge.
I know how people use it. It's sort of not self-consistent with itself.
Okay. Well, there is a problem with power laws.
Some approximation is okay, but
The reason I use this is because it's my understanding that the interplanetary people, where the distributions are complicated, use this just as an empirical fitting formula. And power laws generally are used that way. So I'm not saying it's a theoretical thing. But if you want to do these spectroscopic diagnostic calculations, it would be better to take a thing which looks like the distribution function that we see.
No foundation for
the kappa distribution. Well, there's no foundation for a power law. In general, what makes a power law? Electron spectrum.
Yeah. Just a question for small exponents,
for any?
No.
Even
no.
Xk,
no.
No.
I don't think that's right. It gets very steep because it's minus kappa minus one, so it it converges.
It's more pronounced for small k.
Okay, Gerald. What is the evidence for your statement about the protons having as much energy as the electrons?
Well, the reference is Ermadi and Mangiavidze, 94 or 96. That's the original reference. And there's current work that's being done by Ron Murphy and Jerry Scher and some lesser known Beltway institution. which is trying to do the complementary thing. What Reuven and Natalie did was to take the gamma ray events and look at the electrons. It looked at the hard X-rays. Is that right?
And
oh, good, okay.
Well,
I've saved all the gamma ray stuff for Bob.
Well, you'll talk about that.
Well, I was just going to say that what I was showing in my talk was that you tend to get a real burst in the total voltage drop at the X line right at the beginning of the event. That's partly because you're reconnecting low down where the magnetic fields are strong, and also you're forming that sheath. So that comes pretty close to giving you a hard X-ray burst during the impulsive phase.
Right, but what he's talking about is pre-acceleration where you've got.
Well, I don't think I don't think it's a pre-acceleration in the sense that there's the same particles get accelerated again. I think it's just the particles get accelerated and are lost, then they cause heating, right, by collisional losses. And so it's just there's a different phase of the flare where there's low-level energization of the electrons. Later on, there's the impulsive phase, and that's the acceleration phase for the CME, where one sees violent.